Learn how to raise money and scale fast with crowdfunding by Andrew Thomas.
I am very excited to be here. I absolutely love any opportunity to come talk to people and give back with my advice, which is really rooted in trial and error and experience, which we have gratefully kind of now 4 years in, kind of overcome a lot of obstacles. So I've got a ton of advice. My goal is always to really communicate real advice, like the good, the bad, the ugly. I'm not here to sit up here and say that what I did was special or anything. It's to help you. So let's dive in. So 4 years ago, my co-founders and I started a company called Skybell. We thought of an idea of having a video doorbell that would allow you to see who's at your door from your phone. And it would allow you to do it from anywhere. So you can see that the doorbell is right here, the Skybell. And when someone's at the door, whether or not they press the button or trigger the motion sensor, it sends you an alert to your phone, and then you can see who's there. You can actually talk to them as well. I have one right here. I will pass this around so you can see. So we are an Internet of Things company. And 4 years ago, not a lot of people were talking about Internet of Things. We thought we were just making a product, right? This really great user experience around seeing who's at the door. We didn't even know we were getting into what became IoT. In 4 years, it has absolutely exploded, right? And so you could see we've got two versions of product. These are now the fourth versions of our product. So as we go along, we'll talk about the evolution and how we got there. But as we stand here today, we're 4 years old. We have about 35 employees. We're based down in Southern California. And like I said, the fourth version of these products, I can't believe sometimes we've even gotten here, to be honest with you. It's been such a journey. So I want to tell you guys about our story. I think some of the best ways to educate is just by telling stories about how we got here. And it involves a lot about crowdfunding. I've always believed in sort of hacking anything that you want to do. So what's the optimal way for doing something? And if you're trying to raise money or trying to launch a business, I think crowdfunding is one of the best ways to do it. But everything in my talk, you can apply to your business, even if you're not doing a crowdfunding campaign. But this looks like a lot of stuff we're going to get through pretty quickly. It's just the story of Skybell. So 4 years ago, we couldn't raise money. We went to people and said, we have this idea for a smart doorbell. It's going to connect to the internet. It's going to show you who's at your door. And nobody wanted to give us money. We kind of had a situation where we could either do the idea or not. And the only way to do the idea was on crowdfunding. So it really was crowdfunding to the rescue. We saw it as this great idea. At the time, there were only a couple of really good campaigns. It's not like what it is now. Now Indiegogo has probably four times the traffic than when we launched. But we saw it as a great tool to raise money, but also to communicate to people about our product. It's almost, people kind of miss this point about crowdfunding. It's not just about the money. It's actually a go-to-market strategy as well. So it's a funding source and it's a go-to-market strategy. So it was back in August 2013, 4 years ago, it's crazy. We had an idea for a video doorbell. So I got a couple of my buddies. We got together, we made this video. We got some good photography, made a campaign page. And when we were doing it, I swear to you, I didn't think anybody was going to do it. We launched it on a Saturday. I clicked submit and I went surfing, fully expecting nothing to happen. And I got back and a couple people put some money in. It was like $2,000 or something. I was like, oh my God, we're going to fail. My face is all over this. I had barely even told my family about this idea. I was worried about what they were going to think. And so I went to bed that night and it turns out that Engadget, somebody at Engadget had covered us kind of early in the morning the next day. And when I woke up, that's when everything started accelerating. So we started having 5,000, 10,000, 15,000. And then the next day, TechCrunch covered us. And then Fast Company covered us. And then we used that momentum and just reached out to as many people as we could. And we ultimately raised $600,000 in 30 days on this Indiegogo campaign. And we can dive into the kind of the ways where you can enjoy that success too at part two of this presentation. But that was the fun part, right? That's when like everything is possible. Now suddenly you've got $600,000, you've got all these customers, but now you got to go make the product. That's another thing people forget about crowdfunding. Raising money is great. Building a product or a service or whatever you're going to offer to people is really hard. And so candidly, the first product we shipped was pretty rough. We did not know at the time that inside the device, is a Wi-Fi module that connects to the internet, right? And everybody knows that Wi-Fi is really easy because this iPhone and our laptops make it really easy. It's not really easy. We did not know at the time that the vendor we picked, that I can't name, although I wish I could, that it didn't work on half of all Wi-Fi routers. So we shipped this thing to 4,250 of our Indiegogo backers, and it didn't work on half of them. So this is when you go from like elation, there's no way we're going to fail, like we're going to do the Nest thing and sell for $1 billion. And then now you're like on the floor wondering if there's any way you're going to be able to get out of this. Because with hardware, you got to understand something. When you ship something and it connects to the internet, if it doesn't connect to the internet, it's not going to get fixed through over-the-air updates, software updates. It's got to come back. Customer's not paying for it to come back. You are. So we had to pay for all of these things to come back. So it kind of was like all of the goodwill and momentum we had built was just gone. It seemed like the company was dead 6 months after it started. This is one of those times in the journey where my co-founder Greg and I and Desiree, we sat in an office and we just said, can anybody think of a way where this doesn't result in us folding? Like, can anybody here, we're all three smart people, can you find a way that this actually could work? And the answer was no. But we're all stubborn, so we kept going anyway. So we're glad we did because we fought through it. We fixed the problems. We were able to find out just by testing like crazy where all the intricate parts of our problems were. We updated the Wi-Fi router. We ended up updating the product. And the second one was really good. And suddenly things started turning up again, right? So we launched some partnerships with different IoT companies, what we call cloud integrations. So our product, our doorbell, can tell these other products when someone's at the door through APIs. And so Comcast Xfinity Home included us in their announcement. If smart things, we worked with them. And so you kind of started seeing at this time, this was like 3 years ago, the smart home was starting to take shape. People were starting to connect devices together. And then that's when kind of the momentum started. Still a little bit early though for IoT. And then this was a big thing that happened. We have a competitor who is very aggressive with their marketing, and we saw them going a certain way. And we decided that our strength was in product. We are fantastic at building phenomenal, reliable products, and we're not the best at marketing. So it's kind of a gut check time. We decided that instead of beating them at their own game, we were going to start building the best doorbell that the top brands in the world could trust with their brand. And that included two things. One is the hardware you're passing around is built so well. It is weatherproof. We had people from the U.S. military working on it. It's reliable enough for anybody to trust for a number of years. And then number two is we had to make our media server work in such a way that we could send video to their app. And this was a guess. In hindsight, it sounds like brilliance. But when we made the decision, I mean, it's like peak anxiety. You're going one way or the other. You're either going to fail or you're going to succeed. And so we decided that we were going to make a doorbell so that we figured our partners, future partners, we thought the home security companies would be the perfect fit, would want our video to show up in their app. They wouldn't want their users to have to download our app. So we built our media server so that the video would go from the doorbell from the home through the router up to the servers and then down over into their app instead of ours. And that took a bit of money and a bit of time. And while we built it, our competitors were running more and more commercials and just kind of running away. It made us real nervous. Luckily, again, it paid off. The strategy worked. So Honeywell and Alarm.com are two of the biggest home security companies in the United States, providers of professionally installed home security. And our SkyBell works seamlessly in their app. So if you're an Alarm.com customer, you actually see a doorbell, you know it's a SkyBell because we co-brand. But for the most part, everything happens in the Alarm.com app. And this was a great model for us because not only do you associate with these two great brands, but with B2B, you get to benefit from their decades long of work, sales, brand building, their infrastructure, their customer service. It's really nice. And B2B, you send a bunch of units to one entity or one person. And when you're B2C, you got to sell one unit more or tens of thousands of people, right? So you need bigger customer service teams, more support. So we actually really like this model. And we kind of have started becoming the partner's doorbell. It ends up on people's homes, but really we have built a reputation where if you're a big company like this and you want to have a doorbell, you got to go to SkyBell. And so success, right? Success, I'm here because we've had success. I feel very grateful for it, but overnight successes are built over many years. They're built with blood and sweat and tears. They come from countless hours of work, sacrifice, and struggle, all in the face of uncertainty and doubt. And this is a big part of my personal journey and Skybel's journey and everybody's journey as an entrepreneur is it takes a lot of work. There were more times than I prefer to tell you that I was like lying on the ground, just no idea what to do. No possible ways. You know, almost, if our employees knew how many times we almost missed payroll, they wouldn't have showed up. It just works out when you keep intending on it and keep focusing on where you want to go, keep finding solutions. It just takes a lot of effort. So I want to communicate that to you. I think 4 years ago when I was coming to talks like these, a lot of people have the tendency to stand up here and think that they have some secret solution or that it was easy. I like to communicate the opposite. It was very difficult, but it's completely doable. So now when we talk about how to build a successful campaign or how you all can succeed with crowdfunding, I think it's important to note what I believe the power of crowdfunding to be. So just before we get into the advice piece, what I found is that when you go and try to raise money from VCs, they're going to try to use things against you so that they can ask for, you know, more shares for the same amount of money, or you can basically, they want to dilute you down a little bit. They want more of the company for the same amount of money. So they'll hold this against you. They'll tell you that you have no funding. They'll tell you you have no validation for your idea, right? How do I know people want it? I heard that multiple times. No brand, no press, right? Nobody knows about you. Why would you succeed? No customers and no consumer feedback. And the interesting thing about crowdfunding is that it answers all of these. And I did not know that going into it, but it's really powerful. I think crowdfunding is one of the most powerful innovations we've had in the last 10 years for this reason. It puts all of the power back into the entrepreneur, into the founder's hands. So let's look at each one. No funding, right? Wrong. We just raised $600,000 for a product that doesn't yet exist. Validation for an idea. You could walk around and ask people if they like your idea, and they'll say, yes, I do. And then you say, well, take out your wallet. Here's a Square. Swipe, buy one right now. And they say, ooh, I don't know, right? When you do crowdfunding and people pay you for something that doesn't exist, there isn't a stronger method of validating an idea that I know of. Press and brand recognition. We were very grateful to get some great press and great brand recognition in the beginning. We could take that to people and say, look, we're already building a brand. And then our customers. So we actually had 4,250 customers from our Indiegogo campaign. So suddenly you haven't even shipped a product and you've got customers. And then this was really cool, the feedback. So tons of feedback. In our 30-day campaign, I probably answered 1,000 comments. And I didn't recognize that this was going to happen either. But when we launched, after I got back from surfing, and once the comments started picking up, I literally just sat back with a notepad and I looked at our checklist for what we wanted the product to be, the features and the design. And I just went right off and like crossed off the things people didn't want that they were telling me. And I added all of the things that people told me to add that weren't on my list. This is the people's product. It may not have worked brilliantly on the first go, but product feature-wise, design-wise, it is exactly what people wanted. And so everyone talks about lean startup, right? And Eric Rice, all of this stuff. If you can get your product right the first time, it is so valuable. So even if you don't believe that crowdfunding is the right answer for your business, it's not a bad idea to put something up there just to get the feedback. It's incredible. So right off the bat, I know how people want to use this thing. People were like, I want to put this inside the house. You know, I want to do this with it and stuff that I, as a 28-year-old, didn't understand, right? So, I mean, one came from my sister. I told her about this idea and she's like, okay, I can see who's at the door from my phone. That's great. But how do I turn off the indoor chime from making a sound? Because every time I put your nephew down, the UPS driver comes and wakes him up, right? It's like clockwork. Baby goes down, falls asleep. I start to relax for 2 hours. UPS driver comes, wakes him up. And my 2 hours of bliss is gone. So we ended up doing that exact same feature. Came right from my sister. It's called silent mode. You hit the button. It tells the chime in the house, stay quiet. You still get an alert on your phone. Baby stays asleep. The dog stays quiet. Everybody stays happy. So that was not some brilliant idea we had. That was straight from the customers. So Fast Company called us a crowdfunding sensation, which was pretty sweet. And so I think as I look and thought about this presentation, I wanted to sort of figure out how can I help you create something as successful. And the more I think about it, especially as time goes on, I think that these are the four most important things. There's a lot of other things that go into it, of course, but these are the four most important things. And the video is by far the most important one. So you've probably heard this before, but if you are going to do a campaign, but this also goes for any business, even if you don't, have a video on your homepage, and it's got to be good. YouTube becomes more and more popular. Video is just such a great marketing tool right now in general, but when you make your video, make sure it's aligned well with your brand. So I tell people, invest money into it because most of the time it is relevant. You want to have a nice production quality video. It doesn't mean spend 50 grand, but it does mean spend 5 grand. You can shoot your own, and I think it's a good idea, but as long as it matches your personality. We were selling kind of security and IoT, and we wanted to make sure we were really confident. But if I was selling something else, like there isn't anything wrong with turning an iPhone around and shooting a kind of a selfie video if it's with the personality of your product or personality of your company. So if it's on brand, you can do that. But for most people, invest a little bit of money, do a good video, and then prioritize emotion. You need to connect with somebody who's watching your video within the first 15 to 30 seconds. If you don't do that, they're not going to watch the rest. So the mistake is people want to talk about the product and its features. You want to talk about what the person's going to feel like when they use your product. So one of my favorite books that has come out in a while is Start With Why. If you don't have time to read that book, then go online and just watch Simon Sinek's TED Talk. It's 15 minutes long. It's basically the book condensed in 15 minutes, which is super optimal. So watch that video. Photography needs to be good. So need is obviously a statement of affirmation, but it should be good because you want people to go to your page. And this is, again, whether you have a crowdfunding campaign or a website, you want people to feel like your page matches the other things that they see on the web. Right, so when I looked at some studies in psychology around people and why they like websites, a lot of people can't tell you why they like a website. They usually just tell you that it looks like other stuff they've seen. And people know that they don't like a website because it doesn't look like some stuff they've seen. So if you're marketing to, let's say, women, your product photography better look pretty similar to Anthropologie's. Otherwise, it's not going to feel as congruent. So that's actually pretty important. Now, you don't need to go hire Anthropologie's photographer, but again, do a good job. You don't have to spend a ton of money, but spend some money. And then the content supports the emotion. So your content is your opportunity, the page content, right? So when you scroll down our Indiegogo campaign, there's lots of information. That's there to support the emotion. It's there to support and validate the person's decision that they like your product and that they like you. So you want to give them as much information as you can. Tell them why you need the money, what you're going to use the money for. Tell them about what the product will do. Tell them about the product features. That's where you can go wild and really get into some specs, right, and process. Don't do that as much in your video. So if you do your video, the first 30 seconds should be around emotion or excitement or the product and how it's being used. And then you should have you in the video, right? People are investing in you when you're on crowdfunding. You are the person who needs to convey the trust that you'll make a product that doesn't exist yet, or service or whatever it might be. Number four is build trust. So all of these things need to build trust, right? Having high quality content or photography is building trust. Saying the right things in your content builds trust. Everything you got to do needs to communicate that you will follow on your word and not take all of their money and just move and retire in Thailand. Because if you raise $500,000, you could totally do that. And if you're not going to retire in Thailand, you should definitely go because it's amazing. So those are sort of the four big things I would say. In terms of preparation, this one is big. You're going to be successful because of how well you plan. And I wish someone had told me this a little bit before. Luckily, we did a good job with some of these, but I did not realize this one. So suddenly you're an entrepreneur and you're working 60 hours a week. This campaign will add 40 hours a week. So I think for about 80 or 90 days, I was doing about 105. That was my max for what I can kind of do in a week, 105 hours. but you win or lose with the planning. So this is where you win or lose. Again, creating a successful campaign is really good, but you want to build a business off of this. Right? Skybell was not just a successful crowdfunding campaign. We've become a business. So this is how you do it. You can't screw these up. Perks and schedule of their release. So you got to isolate what perks you're going to offer to people, what they're called, what you're going to offer in them. And then I also advise don't put all of them out in the beginning. So one really good trick is put a lot of them out, but keep like some secret perks that release them midway through your campaign so that as it goes up and it starts to kind of lull, you have this like new secret perk you can announce to everybody and it kind of brings some excitement back in. Maybe you can go back to another journalist and say, hey, you know, we did this, or go back to another influencer and tell them of a new perk. You got to price your perks correctly. So I'm a big fan of the tier. Give like the first 200 people a screaming deal and then reel it back for the next group of people. Make sure you have margin protection, because if we didn't do as good a job we did, we would have had no money to issue all the returns and then ship new product back. So we ended up netting. We lost money on the campaign, but we did a decent job pricing, thankfully. And then the raise amount. So here's a trick. Don't ask for too much, right? So if you got an ambitious project, you need to ask for enough money so that people feel confident that if it raises, that's enough money to build the product and succeed. But you want to keep it a little bit lower so you can kind of, I don't want to say game the algorithm, but in the first, I don't know what the time is, maybe 48 hours, if you reach a certain point or a certain portion of what you ask for, like if you ask for 100 grand and you hit 33,000 in the first 2 days, it signals to Kickstarter and Indiegogo that your campaign is hot and they should put it in the email, they should put it in the social media, and they should put it on the homepage. So if you want 100 grand, which is what we asked for, then do it. But if you only need 50, only ask for 50, because it's going to help that multiple. And then marketing plan. So this is important. You should have a schedule, because this stuff is going to go quick. You want to start in the beginning, right? So here's our marketing page. Start early. If you can, put up a splash page. Start getting your social media up and running. Start building an email list if you can. Maybe test some ads. And then I love influencer marketing. So I think this is a great way to get people involved. You won't have the budget necessarily in the beginning, but if you kind of approach them and say, hey, you know, we're doing this project and we're kind of scrappy and we'd love your support, you can get people out there who will do it. Just go real niche and find the ones that maybe aren't at the top, right? So if you're a top influencer, you're getting a ton of solicitations. If you're a big one, you may even have an agent. Don't even bother with those. Go mid-tier, lower tier, get a bunch of them involved. And if you can, another trick to do, I learned this from How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, is get them involved in the creation process. So if you bring someone in and you say, hey, can you help us do this? You know, they might be very passionate about it and they may kind of give you some tips and some tricks or what they think you should do. And of course, they're going to be excited about it because they just invested part of their own energy, right? Made a contribution to it. So you can usually get them to help market for free. The PR Blitz, there's two ways to think about this. There's a firm in LA that we used, and they specialize in startup PR. So they know all of the journalists that cover crazy entrepreneurs with wild dreams and wacky ideas. You don't want to go get somebody on like Montgomery Avenue here who like is used to working with Google, because the people they're reaching out to aren't going to cover this. You need the people who will actually cover a crazy startup that hasn't done anything except for launch a Indiegogo campaign, right? So that's what I'll say about PR. Make sure you got the right group. And then only do like a 3-month campaign with them. Don't let them talk into some 6-month, you know, thing. It's not necessary. And then this is kind of big. Since crowdfunding's blown up, there's a ton of people who will promise you the world. Just be careful. I don't know any good ones. Otherwise, I would tell you. But the best way to figure out how to have success is go study people's campaign pages that were successful that are similar to the product that you have. That's what we did. I think it was the watch company, Pebble. I stole a lot of stuff from Pebble. So this is kind of a big one too, right? So you can't just create a successful campaign. You need to parlay that into a successful business. So what are the big ways to do that? We filed RIP before we launched. We had had some experience in hardware before, so we kind of knew the patent process. So we were able to do it quickly. but you want to file your IP, do a check though before you do. Have an attorney check, because you don't want to pay the attorney to write all the application that someone's already got the patent. So check with counsel about how necessary they are. There's different opinions. I'm grateful that we have them. We have 75 issued patents right now, and it's kind of nice to have. The prototyping for mass production, this is something that most people won't know about when you start. This will break your company. You can go design a product, especially hardware, and the engineers will come back and tell you that it works. So you'll build it, and you'll go to a small batch manufacturer who can make you 5,000 units of it. And then you realize that you've got bigger companies, Honeywell, Apple, whoever, knocking on your door, and you realize you need to make 50,000 units, and you can't, because the way that you designed the product can't be run by machines to the tune of 3,000 a day. So you got to consider that up front. Make sure that when you're prototyping for your campaign, that someone addresses the realistic ability for you to mass produce the product. And then try your best to get the product right the first time. If you're engaging your audience, this becomes really easy, but this is so important. I really wish that we could have avoided so much time and headache if we had gotten the product right the first time. Check everything. We didn't know to check 150 routers to make sure we worked on all of them, right? We did what most people would do, go get four or five of them, and if it works, you're good. Just test everything. Try to make sure you're launching a product right the first time. And then scaling fast. So this is something that we did pretty well. To give you an idea of the timeline, the 4 years from start to finish, but we thought of the idea around May. We launched the Indiegogo campaign in August. And then we shipped in January that next month. So from the idea to when we shipped the product, it was 7 months. And then from there, we got started trying to do the consumer thing. We shifted, and then we went to the B2B side. And the B2B side, to me, is where you can really increase scale pretty quickly. But we'll talk about both. So crowdfunding is a go-to-market strategy. You are not actually raising money. You are pre-selling product. So you need to go make that product. And when you ship it to the person, you actually just kind of closed the loop on that deal. You didn't acquire anybody new. That's not new revenue. So you got to make sure that you have a plan for how you're going to add new users right after it. If you got hardware, great option is Amazon. Of course, they'll take you. That's a good way to kind of keep the momentum going. But you also want to build your brand. So focus really hard on your brand. Ship on time. We didn't. I'll tell you, there's a point in your campaign where everything's great. You raise all this money. You have a ton of fans. Everybody loves you and supports you. And then the day you are late, half the people all turned on us. And suddenly I'm getting crazy emails. People are trying to find out if I'm in Thailand, already retired. It was insane. So it actually got so bad that we had a customer in Germany hire a private detective to follow me and to make sure we had an office. A couple people called the police. They show up at our office and they're like, we have some people saying that you have stolen their money. You're supposed to make some product. And I said, look, officer, nothing could be further from the truth. If you want to come help us troubleshoot, we could really use another person. And I opened the door and there's doorbells everywhere. There's routers everywhere. And I said, the second we solve this, we're shipping. And they said, okay. And then I think the Attorney General of Orange County also came to figure it out. But people found out my sister, people found out my cousin, and were hitting them up on Facebook saying, your brother's a crook. Where is he? Did he steal our money? You know, he's immoral. It was madness. So you don't want to hurt your brand, right? Because these people go online and they write it. And what does Google do? They index it. So be careful with your brand. Ship on time. Ship a good product. That's really good for scaling fast. And then for B2C, retail doesn't necessarily mean success. So the old dream was getting on the shelf of Best Buy and running commercials. That doesn't work. In my opinion, it still works, but it's not necessary anymore. You can use influencers. You can use content marketing. Content marketing is huge right now. YouTube. You can sell direct, right? Get some momentum on your own before you go try to get into Best Buy. The big retailers, it's high margin. There's restock fees. They can return product at any time. It is not as nice as it seems. It's really fun going and seeing your product on their shelf, but it doesn't guarantee you success. On the B2B side, you just got to start hustling. So think about who can benefit from your product. And the benefit isn't just who needs to buy our product. it's you can help big companies in a lot of different ways, right? So we may represent a good product for some of our bigger companies, but we also represent speed to market. We can iterate this video doorbell through our own means faster than they can, right? So speed to market, cost reduction, innovation. Does your product kind of complement their offering, which is what we found, right? So we're not trying to like take people out, you know, we're trying to disrupt this thing in the traditional sense. But if our product is disruptive, but it becomes complementary to our big partners, then that's a really good partnership. What do I use for B2B tips and tricks? Because I've done all of our deals for Skybell. LinkedIn, conferencing, and content marketing is how I do it. There's a lot of LinkedIn tricks I can share, but LinkedIn is so underrated. People really don't know how to use it. Read some stuff about it, or if you want to shoot me an email, I can send you some tips and tricks. But conferences are great. Go meet people. I spend a lot of time traveling to people, meeting people. I actually call people still. It's crazy, and I think people appreciate that. And then content marketing. So when you're putting out valuable content, it does really good for brand perception. It's good at sort of bringing in leads, but I find it to be very useful as kind of a supportive tool. So let's say I might write an article, and if I'm trying to get into NASDAQ, let's say, I might write an article that I think my contact there would appreciate. And instead of bugging him again to find out where we are in our process for closing this deal, I might just send him an article, or I might tag him on LinkedIn when I post the article. So content is a very effective tool. And then the last side is just that I'm here to help. So I put out a lot of content on my handles and my social. On Twitter, there's a lot of stuff on IoT and entrepreneurship. On Instagram, I'm at Optimal Founder. I actually put out a lot of mindfulness content there. So just my own personal journey. I learned a lot of tools about mindfulness, and I share them on that Instagram. There's some business stuff there, but it's a lot more mindfulness. And it's sort of the more human side, holistic side of entrepreneurship. What I try to do there is communicate that if you don't work as a person, mind, body, and spirit, then your business isn't going to work. So that's what I try to do with this camp or this social channel. And then LinkedIn, of course, I'm on LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. You should too. Check it out. But I'm always happy to give any tips and tricks. If you want to shoot me a note, I'm happy to get to it. May not get to it right away, but I will get to it. And then I also have a column on Inc., an active column on Inc. It's called The Mindful Entrepreneur. I write that column because, again, there was a time where I actually was quite depressed. I was a financial planner when I was 26 years old. That was 6 years ago. And I had heart rate problems, anxiety problems, you name it. And I was a financial planner. Every day I would go to the office and not want to be there. I would go to TechCrunch and read about tech entrepreneurs. And I would say to myself, I'll never be like them. It was a real dark time for me. And luckily, through some events, I snapped out of it. That's where I found a lot of this mindfulness stuff. Dr. Wayne Dyer, Abraham Hicks, Law of Attraction, meditation, a lot of different topics. And so I write that column on Inc. It's called The Mindful Entrepreneur, again, because I believe so strongly that our ability to, you know, stay sane and stay healthy, emotionally healthy during all of the ups and downs, that's what allows you to have success. And I'll tell you, I'm grateful for that experience because when I was negotiating with these big companies, they love to beat you down. They love to get 12 people in a room, and it's a big conference room, and it's like Harvard MBA, Harvard MBA, Harvard MBA, and then the slacker Northwestern MBA, and then Princeton, Harvard, Harvard. They're all 45. They all have a plan, and you're sitting there at the end as this doorbell salesman, and you're just looking at all these people, and they're like, we'll crush you, you know, we'll do this and that. And when you realize that none of your success as a person is actually tied to any of the people in that room, it kind of sets you free. And you can kind of not make decisions out of fear, right? And when you have mindfulness and you've meditated, you stay in the middle, you stay calm, right? And when you don't need power from people, you don't give your power away, you treat people well. So I found that the more likable I am, the more I listen, the more I treat people well, the easier closing deals is, the more introductions I get from people, the more favors I get from people. So I do it for myself, but there's also some really great benefits as well.